It's the Monkees, folks, and it's You Get the Blessing. Welcome aboard. Glad you're listening.
Oh, I could hide neath the wings of the bluebird as she sings. The 6 o'clock alarm would never ring.
Davy Jones.
It rings and I rise, wipe the sleep out of my eyes.
We just lost half our audience, though.
Think big, folks. Think big.
Cheer up, Sleepy Jean. Oh, what can it mean to a daydream believer and a homecoming queen?
All right, you can turn it down. They don't make them like that anymore. That's Daydream right. Believer by the Monkees. You love that song, don't you, Bob?
You know, I do now. I didn't like the Monkees when they were actually... Back when they invented them, I thought they were like a phony band, but you know, they actually were all good musicians.
I think my high school sweetheart put the heave-ho on me one week. So the next week, not wanting to slow down any, I took a cute girl named Liz to see the Monkees downtown, and my former girlfriend decided she liked me again if she was going to actually miss the Monkee concert now and then. So we got back together. Anyway, I'm Bo Mitchell. Bob Belts, my co-host. Welcome, Bob.
Good morning. Good to be with you again, Bo. And hey, we got a good guest this morning. Friend. Haven't seen him in a while, so it's fun to have him on with us. Dix Winston.
Dix is a believer, and he is a big dreamer. So what an appropriate song, Daydream Believer by the Monkees, to start us out. And I can't even remember when I... met Dix, but you two guys...
It was in jail, wasn't it?
You know what, Dix? I make the bald jokes, and I make the jail jokes. No, we've told the story, but some people might remember it. But Cherry Hills Community Church, before we get there, though, because he kind of stepped into your role a little bit there.
Yeah.
After you left, I came
and
in and...
took it to a whole new level.
Yeah.
Dix is a great Bible teacher and a great guy, as you can tell. And You Get the Blessing is here every week to introduce you to wonderful people who are impacting this community, this world, for the cause of Christ and good things. So, Dix, give us a little of your background as we get started this morning and just tell us what it was like around your house growing up and at what point you came into a faith of your own.
Yeah, I mean, I think I grew up in a lot of typical houses where you kind of went to church, and that was the tradition. You'd go. We all hated going to church. I never figured out a good reason to go to church. It seemed like there's a lot better things to do on a Sunday morning besides go to church. In fact, sometimes I still think that, and even though I'm a pastor now. So I, in fact, was a state finalist in original oratory in high school.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
You're
and,
a good speaker.
And the topic was the hypocrisy of organized religion. And so, you know, I was, if you will, kicking against the goads.
Did you win the national championship
on
that?
I won the state. And it's funny, I was being judged by a group of nuns. It was at a Catholic school I was being judged at. And they came up to me and they said, "We can't argue with you." So I said, "There's got to be some." So
there are non-Christians out there today, or pre-Christians, because they heard your arguments.
Yeah.
Way to go, Dix.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, I go to college, and you know, it's back in you know early 70s, and everybody's a hippie back then, and I'm down at Ole Miss, and I'm the only hippie down at Ole Miss, and I'm having a blast. All of a sudden, this guy's from Campus Crusade for Christ come up to me, and they start sharing the gospel. I said, yeah, I've heard it. In fact, da da da. They said, "Yeah, but have you ever investigated it?" I said, "Well, there's nothing to investigate." They say, "Give us an hour." And they sat down with me, and they started going through some apologetics. They started turning me on to Josh McDowell. And I came to the conclusion that this stuff's true. And, you know, I don't know what I've been believing all this time, but it's good stuff. And so as a result of that, I says, listen, I'd be a fool not to believe the truth. So I committed my life to Jesus Christ, was a believer the whole time, went on crusade staff, got a THM at Dallas Theological Seminary. Got a doctorate in apologetics from Southern Evangelical.
Hang on, you said the word apologetics, and THM. What's that, a degree?
Well, a THM is a master's of theology. You know, I was a Hebrew major. Because
I thought it was a boat.
Yeah,
THM.
Yeah.
No, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I got that. I liked the Hebrew language. It was like a puzzle to me, and I'm ADD, so puzzles are great. So I figured I majored in Hebrew, you know.
And you're ADD? What are the odds of that?
Yeah. So anyway, I after graduating from Dallas, served with an organization called Search Ministries, which did apologetics. And what drives me nuts, and what I do a lot of times when I speak, interrupt me anytime you want to.
Well, search out.
All I was going to say is define apologetics for guys that don't know what it
is. Yeah, apologetics. Thanks so much, Bob. Apologetics is most people. I tell them I've got my doctorate in apologetics. They said, "So you're a great husband. You know how to apologize." Yeah. And that's what most people think it is. Apologetics come apologia. Just how do you defend the faith?
Yeah.
How do you know Christianity's true? And lots of times when I speak, I'll go into the audience and I'll go up to the audience and say, are you a Christian? They'll say yes, because it's a Christian group. I say, do you believe there's a God? Absolutely. And I'll say, why? And I get the furrowed brow look. I'll go to somebody else and I say, so you believe that the Bible is the Word of God? And they'll say, absolutely. I said, why? And I had one person said, well, it says holy on the cover. And I'm kind of, oh my gosh. So basically, you believe something, but you don't know if it's true. And so what I try to help people do, especially in the pastor and stuff like that, and with people I interact, and I love hanging around with non-Christians who want to work through the issues. And one of the things that I do is say, listen, there's a difference between knowledge and belief. You can believe all kinds of nutty, fruity, stupid things. But you only have knowledge if you've justified that belief, if you put that belief system to a test. And so what I did my dissertation on is, what are the tests that you apply to Christianity to see if it's true? And I came up, the dissertation, I had to come up with a goofy academic name, but I call it the 6-point whammy. And I found that there's a logical progression. Truth is tenable. God is logical, miracles are possible, the Bible's reliable, Christ is credible, and salvation's available.
Walk us through those. We'll jump in if we want to ask a question, but that's a great place to start.
The 6-point whammy.
That's the 6-point whammy.
Hang on, you're listening to the voice of Dix Winston. For some reason, he's screaming a lot, but that's okay.
He's an excitable kind of a guy.
We like that.
Yeah, we do.
And Dix has given us a little of his background, how he came to faith, how he was in seminary, how his dissertation was called the 6-point whammy.
Yeah.
And now we're asking about...
Yeah, my father doctor said we've got to come up with a more academic sounding name than that, you know, so...
I don't know if I can still remember the title of my dissertation was something like the therapeutic effect of the pastoral alliance on the self-esteem of midlife men.
Wow. I like 6-point whammy.
Yeah. So mine was, but that was, but what the thesis was is I hang around with some guys and see how it goes. And so, you know.
Okay, keep going and explain that point
by
point. Yeah,
the 6-point whammy. But one of the things that I found, especially living in post-modernity, that is...
Where is that located anyway? Yeah, is that outside of Dallas too?
Especially living in this environment where, you know, people say, well, that may be true for you, it's not true for me, there's no absolute truth, you know. To which when someone says, you know, there is no absolute truth, the standard stock reply is, are you absolutely sure?
And that's good.
Whammy one. Yeah. We've just whammied one of them.
Yeah. One of the things that I found you have
play
to
the
do,
music again.
One of the things I found you have to do when you begin talking about truth is you've got to define it. And you know, and so a lot of people, if I say, "How would you define truth?" and they don't even have a definition, they'll say things like, "Well, I believe the Bible's true." No, you've described it. You haven't defined it. And I said, the classical definition of truth is that which corresponds to reality. Now, unfortunately, to the degree that you're not living a truth-based life, you're living in fantasy, you're insane. So what I'm trying to get people to do is when they think about spiritual issues, to think about it in the context of truth. So let's find, what is the reality? And then, after I give a definition of truth, I come to there's three logical implications of that. Number one, truth is logical. People say, well, truth isn't logical. Well, that sounds pretty logical to me. And so they self-contradicted themselves. Or, and then secondly, I say truth is universal.
That's a minor whammy on the bigger whammy.
Yeah. I'll say truth is universal. And they say, what do you mean by that? And they say, well, you know, and I say, well, what's true for me is true for you. And then they'll say, well, that's not true. I said, well, I'm kind of curious. Is that statement, that's not true, true for both of us? If it is, truth's universal. And then finally they'll say, you know, and then I finally say truth is knowable, that you can know some truth. You can't know truth, really. Well, is that a true truth, that you can't know truth? If that's true, then you know some truth. So you can know truth. So you've got to start with truth, because eventually you get to a place that Jesus says, I am the way and the truth. Well, if there is no universal truth, if truth is not logical, and if truth is not knowable, then the gospel message gets no traction.
So, Bob, we've got obviously big personality, humor, but great intellect here. Why do so many people think when you come to Christ, it has to be an emotional, non-intellectual experience to embrace it? And how can we today on this show just tell people, keep listening? You got a great mind here, like yours, sharing that it doesn't have to be just a feel good deal.
Right. And I think that the reason is that a lot of people don't need that to begin with. Now, I think that, you know, once they've come, for me, faith was sort of a leap, you know, so you have a logical, rational approach to trying to think things through, like a C.S. Lewis sort of conversion, where he really got to the point where he, like you said, Dix, he believed, he knew, having processed this, that God was real. And he said, I got down on my knees that night, the most reluctant convert in all of England. So again, it was something he had processed. I think on the other hand, I'm probably a good example of this. I just was at a point of need in my life that when I heard the gospel, you know, that Jesus loves you, has a plan for your life, can invade your life, you know, to me, it was something from the heart more than the head. But after I came to faith, I was so challenged by college professors and others that, you know, I had to go back and learn the kinds of things that Dick is talking about. But on the other hand, you will encounter people that's their hurdle. I think people have different kinds of hurdles.
Gotcha.
And if the hurdle is intellectual, then being equipped to answer questions, you know, is great. So anyway, are we still on the first whammy?
That's the first point. Truth is tenable.
Okay.
Second is God is logical. And what I do in that chapter in the dissertation is I walk through the problem with atheism. And if there is no God, as Dostoevsky said, then all things are permissible. You get into a relativism as far as morality. There's no it'd be like being on a football field with no referees. I mean, I think that's called rugby. But anyway, it would be in a situation where no one's deciding what's wrong, if it's a first down or not a first down. So I go through the problem with atheism, in that atheism, it's morally untenable because you don't have a good moral basis. It is intellectually untenable because you would have to be God to say there is no God. I mean, it's possible that, I mean, if you took about all the knowledge in the universe and you say, how much have you acquired, maybe 1% of 100th of 1%, well, it's possible that that knowledge of God is knowledge that you haven't gotten yet. But also,
and the minute they say, okay, maybe, they've become an agnostic.
Exactly, they're agnostic. Yeah. And that's why when I talk to people, I said, so you're an atheist. You've got all the knowledge in the universe. And because to be an atheist, you have to. Most people are agnostic. They'll say, okay, I just don't know. And then I say, are you willing to look at the evidence? Now, if they're not willing to look at the evidence, then let's go play golf. If they're willing to look at the evidence, then let's sit down and look at it. I mean, not that golf's a bad thing. It's a great thing. But anyway, and after the problem of atheism, one of the things I do the proofs for theism. And there are the three classical proofs that I'm sure you know, Bob, is the cosmological argument. Creation requires a creator. Where did this thing come from? Secondly, you've got the moral argument. Morals require a moral lawgiver. And then thirdly, you've got the argument, the design argument. Design requires a designer. Now, a lot of people say, well, where do morals come from? And if you look at a perfect example of a society that wanted to throw out God, you look at Nazi Germany. And because when it comes to morals, either the powerful are going to decide what's right, what's wrong, or an individual is going to decide what's right, what's wrong, or the society as a whole is going to decide what's right and what's wrong. Well, you had the powerful, the Nazi party in Germany, deciding it's okay to gas Jews. You had an individual, Adolf Hitler, that was part of his plan. And then you had the complicity of the German people said, okay, let's do it. So if you're going to decide morals on the powerful, the individual, society, you got a problem. It's called Nazi Germany, and it's called death. I submit that the only basis for a logical, rational explanation of morality is the character of God. Now, someone say, well, how do you know there's a God? That's why you go through that. The next one is followed. The next one's easy. If you've established that there's a God, miracles are possible. And it's simply stated this way. Miracles are possible. If there's a God who acts, and then this, acts of God are possible.
So this is whammy three.
Whammy three, okay, miracles are possible.
Okay.
And you've got to have that if you're going to have Christianity.
I need to remember this because I'm going to, this will be my sermon, see, Sunday. I won't have to prepare anything. I'll just preach dicks.
That's fine. Use it.
Miracles are possible.
Yeah. So miracles are possible. It's very simple. And one of the things I do in that chapter in Miracles Are Possible is I look at the misconceptions of what a lot of people have about miracles. Namely, the idea, expect a miracle a day. You know, like miracles are like, you know, they're dropping all around you. Where in the Bible, you find miracles are kind of, you know, they're kind of gathered or clumped together in three main periods, each lasting about 40 years, and then they kind of trail off. You see them, you obviously, the creation's a miracle, but you see them obviously with Moses and Joshua. You see them with Elijah and Elisha, and then you see them with Jesus in the early church. And each one of those areas represent a new revelation that God's giving. In other words, a miracle is the imprimatur of God to say, I'm speaking, hello, McFly, listen.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that actually the word that's translated, as you know, oftentimes in the New Testament, miracle, it really is probably more accurately translated a miraculous sign.
Sign, exactly.
So as something that,
right.
And so Jesus, you know, I like thinking about the fact that Jesus never did anything haphazard.
No.
Everything he did, there was an intention and purpose. So his miracles were all designed with intentionality and purpose to be a sign.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
He wasn't like this gunslinger that says, hey, watch me shoot the birds out of the air.
Yeah.
He always did his miracles for a reason. Well, once you've established miracle, then you get into the Bible being a miraculous, gift from God. The Bible itself being inerrant. And one of the things I talk about, and it's too lengthy to go into much in depth, but I said there's two things about the Bible. The Bible is not only good history, it's true history. What do I mean by that? Simply this. And this is the fourth point, fourth of the whammies. The Bible's reliable. The Bible's good history. In other words, what you're reading is what those original guys were writing. You can have bad history. Someone wrote something and it got screwed up and everything and miscopied. And so what you're reading today is not that. Secondly, it's true history in that what you're reading actually is what was happening. And because and you get into the bibliographic evidence and that sort of stuff, and you show that the Bible is a reliable book. It takes more faith to disbelieve the Bible than to believe it.
Yeah, and that's a great way to approach folks that are struggling intellectually too, because this is probably not kind, but you know, one of the things I learned early was, you know, because I was when I came to Christ, I was in a university setting, a secular university, and if you talked about these things, you know, it was very common for someone to say, well, you know, the Bible's full of errors and mistakes.
Right.
And my first response to that was always to ask, have you ever read it?
Yeah.
And amazing how many people have been taught that the Bible's full of errors and mistakes that have never even read it.
Well, one of the things I like to say when someone says, well, the Bible's full of errors, mistakes, myths, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, and I say, have you ever read it? Oh, yeah, a little bit. Well, could you point out one of those errors and mistakes to me? And they say, well, no, I can't. So how do you know it? Well, my professor told me.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, how does he know it's true? And so once you've established the Bible, the central person that the Bible's getting to is Jesus Christ. And so one of the things that I say is Jesus Christ was who he claimed to be. And I look at his claims, and a lot of people don't realize that he was claiming to be God.
Yeah.
Those claims were corroborated by his disciples. They believed he said that. And they were also corroborated by his enemies because they were trying to rock him to sleep with big stones. They were trying to stone him because he's making himself out to be God. So everyone understood what Jesus Christ was claiming. The only issue is, does he have the credentials for that? And there's 4 points under that. Mm-hmm. And the credentials that he has for that is you've got fulfilled prophecy. You've got his claims that were in fulfilled prophecy, fulfilled that. But the biggest, and I'll just skip to the kind of bottom line, or as my son's commanding officer says, he says, give me the bluff explanation first. Mm-hmm. Bottom line up front. And bottom line up front is the empty tomb. And I couldn't come up with a better explanation for the empty tomb than what happened. I tried, and if you ask people, so what happened? Well, I believe the friends stole the body. Really? And they all died believing a lie. There's a lot of people who will die for a lie, but they believe it to be the truth. These disciples died for something that they would have known was false. No one does that. So I believe Christ is credible, which leads to the obvious, the sixth of the 6-point whammies, is salvation's available. It's a gift. What are you going to do with it? Accept it or reject it?
And after you accepted it and felt a call into the ministry, you did spend time teaching like this at Cherry Hills, and now you've launched another endeavor, which is really cool. And I know Barry and Audrey Smith are part of that. So tell us about the church.
Yeah, it's called Cross Point Community Church. We started about 9 months ago. Had a wonderful experience with Cherry Hills and Jim, and we just had a great time there. But, you know, we wanted to build a little bit more of a smaller community and never get to be huge so everybody knows each other. And we wanted to just emphasize on practical verse-by-verse exposition of Scripture, which is what I was doing at Cherry Hills as well as disciple-making. I was on Campus Crusade for Christ for 3 years, and that was so drilled down deep into my soul. I just kept getting asked, and interestingly enough, a gentleman that discipled me was my campus director of Campus Crusade for Christ, is now here in town, and we've reignited our relationship. And he's thrilled. He taught me all the stuff that I know about discipleship. And Lowell Adrian's his name. I'm grateful to God for he and Peggy because they discipled me as a young believer. And, you know, he would always ask me, where are your men? Where are your men? Where are your men? Who are you discipling? So that was drilled so deep into my soul that I said, you know, a church, they need to have that as the core. And so one of the things we've started doing is we've got this discipleship program we're taking everybody in the church through. So it's been fun, in spite of the fact of me as the pastor. You know, God's blessed our little fellowship, and I'm just grateful to be a pastor of this group.
Tell us where it is so that people that are listening that maybe are in that area and are looking for, you know, someplace.
Sure. We meet at Lone Tree Elementary School, which is just it's just right near Heritage neighborhood. It's on Lincoln and Yosemite. It's right in that area there, just off of 25.
So you turn off of that corner, Yosemite and Lincoln, like you're going into that Safeway.
We're right behind it.
Through the Safeway.
Yeah, go through the. Yeah, preferably go around it, you know. I mean,
you might want to pick up a soda on the way.
Yeah, soda on the way or something, you know, a beef jerky or something to come in, or a Red Bull for me.
It's a great location.
And you guys have a website that people can go to?
It's CrossPoint, C-O, as in Colorado, crosspointco.org. And you can get all the other information up there.
CrossPoint.
CO
is a cooking church. You can tell by their pastor, Dix Winston, who's been our guest here today. So I know the couples that go there are excited about what you're doing and your style of teaching. And I bet there's someone today listening or a group that think, okay, the guy's screaming a little bit, but that's a pastor I could learn from. So yeah. Dix, it's really amazingly wonderful that you're using your gifts like
that. Thank you,
Bo. Glad he's planted you there and you're getting it done. I'm going to have Dix come back in a couple of weeks and do a segment with both you guys, just word association, so we can
that'd be fun,
encourage listeners to tune in and get the quick snapshot from two of the smartest guys around about what do things like sin nature and
that'd be fun.
Yeah.
So I got to close
with authenticity. What do those things mean? And have you guys just fire from the hip?
I got to hitchhike on part of Dix's 6 points there, and in particularly in the area of Jesus and who he was. And oftentimes, I think when you talk with people, they, if you ask them about Jesus, you know, they'll say, well, I believe he existed. I don't really believe he was the Son of God, or maybe a great teacher. And again, just as Dix has said, one of my favorite C.S. Lewis quotes, because as Lewis processed this, you know, he wrote that, you know, that someone that made the claims that Jesus made, and if they weren't true, you know, either he was an absolute lunatic, or if he made those claims knowing they weren't true, he was a liar of demonic proportions. But if he made those claims and they are true, the only other option is that he's Lord. So he had this great little way that he would, Lewis would process, he's either a liar, a lunatic, or in fact, the facts are true and he is Lord.
Yeah.
We're betting on Lord.
I'm betting on Lord. It's a sure bet.
All in. I'm all in.
It's a sure bet.
And we got blue chips on you and your new church. Give us all the information again where people might can tune in and come over and join.
They can see us on the website, crosspointco.org, or we meet at Lone Tree Elementary School, which is at the basically the corner of Yosemite and Lincoln, behind the Safeway.
Dix Winston, you've been a great guest.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Folks, dream big, and our big dream for you is Jesus Christ in your life and a life of purpose, meaning, obedience, and excitement. Thanks for tuning in. And it stings.